to Cast and Blast, Florida podcast. Serious outdoorsmen who don't take themselves too seriously.
What's new, Travis?
Nate, we have big news.
Big news.
Big news. This is our 20th episode.
Wow.
The critics said we would last three.
The critics were wrong.
Although given the last few weeks, I'm not sure that we'll see 21.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
21, no. We can legally drink while we record the podcast. Is that correct?
Oh.
So we've been illegally drinking all these episodes.
So super exciting. Congratulations to you.
Yeah, to you too.
Yeah, and to Em, who this is her like sixth episode, but she's taking full credit of all 20.
Well, she's edited all 20.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I
mean, she's essentially
she should
on, like,
take more credit than we.
She's essentially on like episode 80
right.
of all the editing she's had to do. Also, we did not announce the winner of our youth hunt.
Oh, that's right.
So I felt like we would be remiss not to talk about them on the show. And the way we did this, we had a bunch of entrants. I think we had like 18 entrants across different platforms and stuff. And I put everybody into a spreadsheet, assigned them numbers, went to random.com, and it picked number 3. And the winner, I didn't know this until we were just talking today, is somebody you actually know, was Cheyenne Labar.
Yeah.
Cheyenne, congratulations. I actually talked to her mom on the phone today, and she's going to get to go duck hunting with me and you.
Just to let everybody know there's no foul play involved, just because I know these people doesn't mean I picked them. I wasn't even here when
you drew the name. I did not know you knew them
yeah,
until today.
Yeah.
So very, very
I'm
cool
excited. I'm excited. Cheyenne's a great kid. It'll be a fun trip.
What is new with you, Emily?
Here's what happened. I like to work out, as you can tell, by
Guns.
My muscles. But
epic radio, anytime you can show someone your muscles.
I know. I have a face for radio, too. If you've seen any infomercials at 2 o'clock in the morning, you may have seen like Beachbody, 21 Day Fix, all these programs, whatever. I really like them. They've worked for me. I've seen great results. And I just started a new one called 80 Day Obsession, where we work out for 80 days and there's timed nutrition. So I have to like eat certain things at certain times of the days. And I'm supposed to have no alcohol for 80 days, and I'm on day 2, and I have failed twice. So that's what's new with me.
Over 2. Was it last week's episode where we talked about you having an AA meeting at the beginning of every episode?
Yes.
Okay. So we abandoned that.
Yeah. So it's not going well, but I have nailed the workouts, and I'm going to keep on keeping on and see how this goes.
Also new this week, we have a new voice in the studio with us. The kitchen table, the dining room table, whatever we call this place.
This is the studio.
The studio. Hunter Jackson.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Hunter.
Hunter Jackson has been mentioned on this show countless times. Is that true, Emily?
Countless.
Probably
We've
more bad than
count.
Good.
We mentioned him back during What I Want for Christmas. Emily talked about the gun she wanted.
Right.
Hunter works at Lead Feather, the local Winter Haven gun shop where we shop. So Hunter works at Lead Feather. Helped Emily out with her gun, and he and I have actually gotten to hunt together recently in so much as you could call it hunting. We sat in a boat with his buddy Tyler for a morning.
More just
out.
Camaraderie than anything.
Yeah.
Did you bring snacks?
I don't think there were any snacks.
Guys don't usually bring snacks.
But he
on
is
hunts.
The guide, so I kind of expected him to bring the snacks.
No.
Oh, there's already shade being thrown.
Boom.
Yeah, that's going to come back to haunt him.
Do you feel like, I feel like you should be a country star with a name like Hunter Jackson. Can you sing?
Some people say I can.
Really?
It takes alcohol, though. Unless you're my wife. Then. Actually, it depends. It depends on how I had a Christmas party, like, you know, around Christmas time, and I'd had almost too much to drink. And they asked if anybody wanted to sing karaoke, and I was kind of out of it, but my wife just went up and volunteered me. And I've on a normal conversations we've had, I said, okay, if I ever have to do karaoke, here's one of the couple songs that I ever do. So she just said, hey, play the song, and I did it.
Awesome.
What was it?
What was it?
Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks.
Classic.
That's a classic. I'm not a big fan of like Garth Brooks.
You're not a big Garth Brooks fan.
Tread lightly here.
Okay,
because
I'm back on board
because he has that weird alter ego. I don't know if you're
Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines. He's
yes.
a weirdo.
That's Travis's thing. He can't.
I cannot get past
but
that.
That Friends in Low Places is an iconic.
That's a great
song.
It is a great song.
That's a good song.
So Hunter is here because today's episode is going to be the first. You know, you're supposed to say inaugural.
Right.
But I feel like this is so ridiculous. We're going to do the first annual.
First annual. I like it.
The first annual shotgun draft. So it's going to be some outstanding radio. If you're fishing oriented, hang in there because this is going to, you'll be able to get something out of this.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get to that, I've got Cabela's Fly Fishing Catalog Trivia.
All right.
So right up everyone's alley.
Yeah.
The Cabela's fly fishing catalog came in the mail today. I have it here in front of me.
Why do you get the Cabela's fly fishing catalog?
Okay. How do you feel about catalogs, Nate?
I really like looking at them. I don't ever order anything from a catalog because I have the internet.
I used to really look forward to getting the Bass Pro Spring catalog, where it had all the bass fishing, turkey hunting, everything you could possibly want in a catalog. I haven't got one in a couple of years, and I've kind of not thought about it. So,
Em, you're out on catalogs, right?
I hate them. They clutter up my house, and you will not get rid of them. In fact, if you guys want to after the show, I can take you to his bedside table and open this door, and literally a mountain of catalogs will fall out.
They won't fall out because they're neatly stacked.
But shoved to the gills.
In there, I've got like Kevin's. I've got Dunn's. I've got Max Prairie Wings. I've got Bass Pro. I've got Cabela's.
From 2011.
L.L. Bean. Like, I got them all.
Right. Stuff you can't even buy anymore.
Yeah, stuff that doesn't even get made. You can still flip through the catalog and read about it.
I usually keep a couple on top of the toilet in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's what he saves them for. It's for the beach trip toilet.
But I don't like throwing them away. It's probably the same problem at your
house. They're like old friends.
Yeah, my wife gets mad because I've got issues from a year ago and I just don't want
to
get rid of them.
So in the catalog arena,
I need to meet your wife and start a support group.
Y'all would be very good friends.
In the catalog arena, and Nate, you're familiar with this, like you go to Bass Pro Shops, you can get the Bass Pro Shops spring catalog, like Hunter was talking about, but you can also sign up for like the saltwater fishing or the fly fishing.
The boating one or camping. The archery one, yep. Or the
so I subscribe to all of those because I need all the catalogs I can get.
Well, they don't put all the stuff in the master catalog.
Correct.
They don't put everything. Right. They don't put the specialty.
They may have like
stuff.
3 pages of fly fishing in the catalog.
Right.
Full disclosure, I used to fly fish a lot. I have not picked up a fly rod in years.
Sorry about that.
You fly fish a little bit.
Yeah, when I can. Yeah.
When was the last time you fly fished?
It's been years.
When you were 25?
No, longer than that.
When you and I went fly fishing on the canal for snook?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, probably.
It's been a minute.
Like 10 years, probably.
With like a Reddington fly combo that you bought for $100.
Oh, it was a Bass Pro thing. Yeah, it was like $150.
I think everybody starts off with a Reddington.
Exactly. Okay. What fish is on the cover of this? There's a picture of it here. What fish is this on the cover of this magazine?
Brown trout.
I'm going to go brown trout.
Emily?
What is that?
It is a brook trout.
Brook trout.
See, I was
and in full disclosure, so I don't sound cool, I thought it was a brown trout,
just
too.
So y'all know, the picture is very, very up close, so
yeah,
you don't get a real good
like a
detail.
Fin.
Yeah, it's the fin of a trout.
Just the top
of
his back.
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a brown trout, and then I thought, well, maybe it's cutthroat trout. It's not either of those. It's a brook trout.
I almost went brook, but
I spent
brown.
A lot of time Googling trout today. Again, epic radio when you have a picture reference in the show.
That's great.
What do you think the most expensive fly line in the Cabela's fly fishing catalog was?
Like the brand or the cost?
Either way.
I'm going to go like $80.
I've bought the fly line that's on mine is like $70, so I'm probably going to go like $140.
Emily?
I'll go $141.
Okay.
Bob.
Nate would win if we went with Price is Right rules. It's $129. You were the closest.
That's pretty close.
I knew they'd get pretty
Scientific
expensive.
Scientific Anglers MPX is $129. What's the most expensive rod in the 2018 Cabela's fly fishing catalog?
Oh, gosh, it's got to be close to $2,000.
That's a pretty good guess. I was going to go about $2,000.
I'll go
$2,001.
I'll go $1,000, and if it falls in between, I'll
get
it.
The most expensive in here is the Loop Cross SX at
probably $1,479.
Wow. And the G Lumis NRX is $1,190. Both of those are two handed rods. The most expensive one hand rod is the Clutch Archipelago at $810.
I don't know if you're throwing one of them rods, them things are sweet.
I have actually thrown a clutch rod before, and it makes you a better fly angler.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
I don't
I'm
know
sure
that makes
it
you
does.
An $800 fly angler, but it does make you a
no,
better
I'm
fly
sure
angler.
I'm sure better equipment would make you better.
They say something, if you get on their Instagram page, you have videos of them flexing a $500 rod, and then their $1,000 rod, and it indexes so perfect. A lot of the cheaper rods will have kind of a circular motion. And that archipelago
is perfectly vertical.
Straight. So yep. Where you're aiming is where the line's going.
The guy that founded Clutch Fly Rods, his name is Lee Janik. I told Nate before the show, I was like, I got some good background info. His name is Lee Janik, and we're going to put a link to a Forbes article about this guy. He was like in the construction industry or something and was like, I'm going to die if I continue to do this. And decided he needed to do something different, and he started making fly rods. And he commissioned like a 5 weight for freshwater and a 9 weight for saltwater. And when he went on vacation to the Keys, he sold them to a guide, and
the rest is history.
The rest is history. And it's a really good write-up. Lee's a really good guy. I think he lives in Charleston now, and like he's at the center of the fly fishing industry.
Interesting.
So super good guy. It makes an awesome product. How about the most expensive fly reel? This is the last one I got. Now this is just in the magazine. This is just in the catalog.
In the
right?
catalog.
I'm sure you can find
right. Oh yeah. I'm gonna go 700.
I'll go 100.
I'm gonna go. I know they carry a T-bore, so I'm gonna go 1,000.
That's a good guess. 965. No. Is the T-Bore Signature Series by Ted Jurasik. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Ted Jurasik. We're going to put a link to this in the show notes as well. I've got an article about him. He's the guy, you've all heard of the Billy Pate fly reel.
Mm-hmm.
He invented it.
Okay.
He escaped from Hungary like in the 50s or 60s. He fought in the Hungarian War against the Russians, came to the United States, learned to be a die maker, did not know how to fly fish when he built the first fly reel that he gave Billy Pate. Gave it to Billy, and that reel still works to this day. Like, the drag on it is still as smooth as it was. He has that reel. So,
interesting.
Very cool dude, and really cool stuff. He came through Ellis Island. Wow. Just a really interesting, like, he was a refugee, but the one thing he is the best in the world at is making fly reels. Yeah,
he's made a name for himself, for sure.
So I've never fished with one of those. I have handled one a few times, and they are, you can tell just picking it up, it's like a different. Well, you work in the gun shop or the archery shop. Like
you can feel quality.
Yeah, you know, when you pick up a high-end piece of equipment, it's different.
Right.
Those reels are different than everything else. So, anyway, I just thought that was fun. We don't talk a lot about fly fishing. In fact, we like to mostly make fun of fly fishing. One more little segment before we get into the shotgun draft is a new segment we're introducing called Do You Even Modeled, Bro? last week, in a fit of rage, I promised that anyone that asked about hybrid, modeled, or black ducks on any of the Facebook pages, I was calling them out. So here we go.
Here we go.
Tyler West, you asked if we had a black, a modeled, or a hybrid. Do you even modeled, bro?
Apparently he doesn't.
He doesn't. Trey Knight had a picture of his daughter holding a modeled duck in the driveway and tagged me in it. After listening to last week's episode,
that's a bold move.
That's a bold move. Trey Knight, do you even modeled, bro?
I think he does. He just wanted to hear his name on the podcast.
You think that's what it was all about? You think he was angling for?
He was trolling you, man. That's typical troll behavior.
Okay,
he was going to see if you're going to.
Trey's a good guy.
Go through.
Like I knew that he was. He's a good listener too. He likes the show. So, but yeah, he's getting called out as Do You Even Model, Bro?
He doesn't.
He doesn't.
You know, there is a better way to get your name on the show.
How's that?
That's to leave us a comment in iTunes. 5-star review.
5 stars.
Be creative. It'll get your comment read and your name on the show.
Yes, unless in that comment
you mentioned model ducks.
Oh, I think that should get you 2 mentions on the show.
Okay, first annual inaugural shotgun, not duck hunting, any kind of hunting, I guess. Shotgun draft.
Shotgun draft.
So,
do we have a draft order?
We do.
Emily?
Yes, we're going to let our guest go first. So Hunter will go first.
Oh, cool.
And then Nate will go second because I like him second best. And Travis, you'll go last because that's where you stand this week.
So here are the rules. What's the rule? Hunter proposed a rule. You can't pick the gun someone else shoots.
Yeah, you know, we all have a shotgun we shoot on a day-to-day basis. I just think it'd be like cutting the legs out from under somebody if we took their shotgun.
So the rule is we all know what each other shoot. You can't pick that gun.
What do you shoot?
Oh, I shoot a Supernova.
Okay.
We can pick on other people.
Absolutely.
Personally.
Yeah, yeah.
I shoot a Browning Maxis as my daily driver.
I shoot a Stoger M2000.
M2000. I thought it was a 3000.
No, it's like 10 years old.
Okay.
M2000.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
It's
just older.
Yeah, it's the 3000 is the newer model. Okay. Yeah.
I shoot a Super Soaker, if anybody wanted to know.
All right. So here are the rules. You can pick different models of gun within a manufacturer. For instance, you can pick a Remington 870 or a Remington 1100 or a Remington 1187. Those are all different guns that can be drafted. But you can't say a Remington 870 20 gauge and then I pick a Remington 870 12 gauge.
Or like an 870 Wingmaster.
Right. So the 870, when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. All of 870s ever made are gone.
So here's the other thing. If you are not a hunter, this will not be painful to listen to. This will be a good
time. It'll be entertaining.
Yes. With that, I think those are all the rules.
Right? All right. So, Hunter, you are first.
So, I said it earlier. I'm going to have to go Benelli Supernova. I've been shooting one for the past probably 7 or 8 years. I've beat it to death. I've paddled boats with it. I've worked on my blind with it. I think everybody at one point in time has turned the butt of their shotgun around and knocked the cattails down so you can see through. I've never had an issue with it. It shoots everything. It's a pump.
I have a question about the Benelli Supernova. Because on a recent duck hunting trip, it did not shoot everything. Like, it didn't shoot the ducks. It flew right past your head.
So it was early, in the morning. And
it was legal shooting light.
I'm with two other guys that are on the left side of the boat. Y'all were responsible for the left side of the boat. I'm responsible for the right side of the boat. Y'all were playing patty cake, not watching. And a wood duck that was actually silent. Most
I couldn't
ducks,
shoot the wood duck. I would have hit you in the head. That's how low it was.
Most wood ducks, especially drakes, tend to whistle on their flight, and he was coming silent.
You say it shoots and never. Do you actually shoot it? That's the question.
I do shoot it. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes. All so right. I'm going supernova for my first one.
I like that pick. That's what my cousin shoots. He loves it.
Josh shoots a supernova?
Yeah.
Is there a certain type of person you think of when you think of someone that shoots a supernova?
A good shot?
I don't know how good of a shot Josh is. He has his moments.
Okay.
He had a moment in a local lake where he hit three ducks in one shot, knocked them down.
You know, never happened again.
We talked about shooting a pump, I think, makes you a better shot. I have shot the semi-automatic a few times, and dove, duck hunting, or whatever. I feel like I just tend to just pour through those three shots and not really focus. When I'm shooting a pump, I shoot, pump, and then I have to get back on the target, which I think makes me a better shot.
I think there's some merit to that.
I'm hoping to witness that.
One day.
I'm hopeful to witness that. What are you taking?
All right.
This is your first round. This is your
first
Tom
round
Brady.
Pick. I mean,
this
yeah.
is your
This is it.
Peyton Manning.
I'm going with the Remington 870. I'm going to stick with the pump model. Because, look, it's kind of the same thing he was talking about with that Nova. Those guns have been through everything within the 60-year, how long they've been made. People have done everything to those guns.
Yeah.
And they're still being made, still work. I've got one.
I have one.
I don't shoot it much because I shoot my Stoger mostly, but I have killed a lot of birds with that gun.
They're workhorses.
And it's never broken.
Let me
never
hit you
failed.
With some numbers, because this right. was going to be my pick.
All right.
This is going to be my first pick. 11 million of those have been sold. It's the number one selling shotgun of all time.
That's pretty
11
impressive.
11 million 870s. Because, they make them for home defense now.
Yeah,
all kinds of models.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bird shotguns.
You can get them with the pistol grips. I mean, Remington's known because they make everything kind of modular. So you can really customize the gun and get different barrels and everything. It was built on, speaking of modular, what was called an 1148 receiver. And Remington names their guns. They made 1187, which came out in 1987. The 1148 was a 16-gauge that came out in 1948. And they made it so they could change parts out on it. And they used that as the base for the 870. And it's become the greatest selling shotgun of all time. And this is the gun that everybody, even the Benelli guys and all that stuff out west and up north, this is the gun they shoot when it's cold because it'll shoot.
Right. Yep.
You don't have to worry about it freezing up or anything like right. that. So I think everybody's got an 870 laying in a closet somewhere.
Yeah, that's a rite of passage to have an 870.
Yeah. The old dude, I said the old dude at the ramp that's always wearing a camo trucker hat with like a Phillips 76 logo that's like 30 years old. And he's got like a 13-foot John boat with a Johnson on the back and a pile of ringnecks laying on the front, that's what he's shooting.
Yeah, I was going to say, usually those guys, like my grandfather says, anybody with gray in their beard, you need to listen to them. Generally, the guys with gray in their beard are the guys shooting 870s.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, they know what's up.
All right, you went 870. That was going to be my first pick. So I'm going to go, I don't want to get pigeonholed here, but I'm going to go Browning. And I shoot a Maxis, but I'm not going Maxis.
Okay.
The Maxis has some shortcomings. I shoot it well, but it's got some shortcomings.
You know, you mentioned earlier this week that you've only shot 9 shells through your Browning Maxis. I think that's because you can't get it to cycle.
Yeah, maybe. It does not like dirty ammo. No, my first pick would have to be the A5.
That's a good one. That was on my list.
The Browning A5 is like...
That's a very well-shouldering shotgun.
Classic.
It just falls into place.
It's a classic gun.
It's the OG of the semi-automatic.
It's the OG waterfowling gun, I feel like.
Is the butt of that one, is there a new technology that's different?
No, this is an old gun.
It's a square back design. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to explain, but the barrel sits a little bit higher compared to the butt stock, and your eye just wants to be right behind it.
It's called a humpback.
Humpback.
That's a good one.
Now, the new ones, I couldn't care less about the new ones.
Classic.
I wish they'd have brought it back out how they did back in the 80s and stuff.
Shotgun. Yeah, the 60s, 70s, 80s, those shotguns were they're timeless. They're just awesome guns.
And I did not know this until recently. The barrel actually moved when it cycled the shell. Do you know this? On the original A5, the barrel actually moved when it cycled the shell.
It kicked back.
It kicked back as part of the drive system.
Interesting.
So but they don't make them like that anymore. But that's one of the few guns that you can find that's 40, 50, 60 years old to still be shot.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it should be almost divided into like the Jeep category. Like everybody drives a Jeep. You got the new Jeeps and the old Jeeps, but they're all Jeeps. Mm-hmm. Like the A5s are that way. Because you can buy, they released it a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, we've actually got a couple in my store. But like Nate said, I like them, but I wish they'd have stuck to that old school.
The old design.
Old design, yeah.
The other thing that I think bears mentioning is in duck hunting or water, well, not even duck hunting, but in hunting, bird hunting, the Sweet 16.
Oh,
is the classic, like, and you mentioned a Sweet 16 and everybody reacts Hunter just did. That's an A5.
Your dad has one.
My dad has two now.
Oh, awesome.
He got a second one. Yeah, that's like the
that's
gun
one of the
that
guns,
people talk about.
That's one of the guns I will own.
Yeah, that's going to be one of my picks. It still might be. But yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, the A5. That's my first round pick. And I feel like what I did right there was I just dropped an A-bomb on you guys.
You did.
That was
a
good one.
I just picked Joe Montana or something.
Can we just end this then?
Yeah, I feel like my team is set. So
no, we're back to Hunter for the beginning of round two.
Okay, I'm going to switch it up a little bit, and I'm going Beretta Silver Pigeon for an over and under.
Over under
wow.
Gun. Nice. I like it.
Beautiful shotguns. Probably one of the best known over and unders. There's a few that I like, but that Silver Pigeon, just kind of like the A5. This is a classic, you know.
Perfect lines.
There's all kinds of variations and stuff, and you know, I was talking to somebody at my work today. There's a Beretta store in New York that you can literally get a $30,000 Silver Pigeon. They customize it to you. They measure you like you're getting a tailored suit. So just because it's such a popular gun and such a well-known gun, yeah, and beautiful gun,
oh, yeah,
I'm going to go Silver Pigeon.
Yeah, I don't know that I could shoot one of those.
I would
like that would need to be what we call a case queen in the
yeah
in the
safe queens. I would maybe take it on a dove hunt, but you know, hardcore waterfowl,
no,
I'd have a hard time.
No,
yeah,
that's not
like
going
that
near the salt water or
that's,
really any
that's
water.
That's the quail, dove, like,
trap, skeet,
pheasant, yeah, trap, skeet gun. I mean, that's your upland gun right there. Yeah, you don't take that one to like a saltwater sea duck hunt or something
no
like that.
Especially in Travis's boat.
Yes, because it will get wet.
I got a feeling he tends to be pretty hard on stuff.
Oh, gosh.
I'm very hard on stuff. These are, to me, guns are tools.
They are.
They're yeah, tools to be it used. I do have some, and I don't want to give them away, but I have some that are, like, sentimental mm-hmm that I would not, I would take care of them differently than I take care of, yeah, like, my daily yeah driver stuff. But what
all
do you
right
got?
Nate.
I'm going to go with the Super Black Eagle from Benelli.
Solid pick.
Just classic.
Solid pick.
It's been around for like 20 years. You know, they just came out with the SBE3. Nothing in the like internal mechanisms have really changed over the years.
They don't need to.
It's a system that yeah works. It's that recoil system. It works. It cycles almost everything you put in it. They really don't get affected by cold and weather and water as much as a lot of the gas-operated ones do. It's a workhorse, man.
Hey,
it's the workhorse semi-automatic.
All right, do you want to go first? Do you have any comments on this?
It is a little bit of a hipster gun. I'll give him that.
Yeah. To me, if you shoot a Super Black Eagle, you probably drive a two-door car and you drink imported beer.
Really?
Yeah.
You
yeah
think so?
Yeah, I was yeah going to go imported beer. Like
you wear cowboy boots and skinny jeans.
Yeah, I was going to go Capris.
Yes.
Yeah, you get that hipster feel.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I will give you this. They came out with a new waterfowl pattern, that waterfowl timber, which will make you want to go buy one just for the pattern.
Mm. Now, I shot one, and it pounded my shoulder. I was not impressed with the recoil.
Yeah,
on
the recoil on any recoil operated, it's going to be a little
yeah
more
inertia drive. So,
yeah,
and
inertia.
What we're talking about there is, Hunter, help me explain this, the difference between an inertia drive or a gas.
So inertia-driven is going to use the obviously, the inertia of the shotgun shell pushing the whole system back, or gas-operated is going to use the blowback from the gas of the shotgun shell to send the bolt back.
Right.
So
that's what's
like
going to cycle your next shot.
Yeah, the gas guns capture a little bit of that gas coming out of the barrel,
yeah,
right before it gets
it
out of the barrel,
tube
and sends it back through.
Which now they tend to be a little dirtier.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do get dirtier.
Whereas the inertia drive almost has a spring suspended in it, or a system suspended in it, that has enough, it's a stiff spring, and when it gets pushed back, it has enough force to push it back forward. It ejects the shell, loses the next shell.
Right.
But it's done all by the force of
the shot. I've shot an SBE3. I didn't think they kicked me that hard. Maybe some people
now gas guns.
Yeah, it
gas
could be.
Guns,
it could be. I'm just not. I'm
well,
not.
Yeah, gas guns are, they definitely kick less because they take away some of that
yeah
gas. Because my gun's a, you know, Stoger, it's inertia driven. but it only weighs about 6 pounds. It will rock you.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in that, though, right? Like the weight of the gun and the balance. Yeah,
I've got, and you know,
velocity of the shell and everything.
Right. If I get my
load, and
if I get my cheek down on the stock good, like I'm supposed to, like it feels like some depends on the load. But it feels like I'm getting punched in the face.
Yeah, even shooting clays, if you shoot a 2 3/4 low breast shell,
like
your face will be sore.
Yeah, I'll shoot 50 rounds and I'll have a bruise.
Yeah.
I mean, like a good bruise on my shoulder from that gun. Now, I did make some modifications this year and it definitely doesn't kick as hard as it used to. I just feel like the Benelli, you know, it's going to be around for a long time.
Is this why every duck you've shot at this year you killed on the first shot?
Yes.
As opposed to last year when you killed them on about the 25th shot?
I don't recollect any 25-shot ducks, but...
I'm just saying your ratio of shells to ducks this season's a lot higher.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
A lot higher.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Travis, second round.
Second round, I'm going Remington 1100.
Good
I'm
one.
Staying semi-automatic.
That's another classic.
It is, and I'm going sentimental on that. So to me, the two semis that have probably shot the most waterfowl are the 1100 or the A5, like in the history of time.
I'll
like
give
I'm
you
sure
that.
The Black Eagle will
yeah,
get
I'll
there.
Give you that. Yeah.
I want to say, going back to the Black Eagle, I think it was the first 3-inch or 3.5-inch semi.
Yeah, probably 3.5.
I think it was the
one
first
of the
3.5.
Inches,
yeah, I think it was the first one that would do 3.5. So
yeah.
Anyway, I have an 1100 that was my grandfather's, so it's kind of sentimental, and it only shoots 2 3/4. So I don't actually waterfowl hunt with it, but I'll take it like on a snipe hunt or a dove hunt every
right,
year, just
right.
as like a, or even a squirrel hunt or something, just something sentimental to carry it in the woods. It's like,
sure.
Guns are cool, right? Because
yeah,
they're a heritage piece. Like,
absolutely.
You pass them down.
They carry stories with them and stuff.
Yeah, hopefully my kids will want to take those and give them to their kids and everything else. So I'm going Remington 1100.
One thing I don't like about 1100s is they seem to be a little more finicky once they get dirty.
They are
they're a little heavier. But it's an older gun, like you said. But as soon as you start getting some debris built up in that bolt, it seems to get kind of sticky.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad has 1187.
Yep.
And it went a long time without being cleaned. And it got to the point where it wouldn't cycle anything. Like, the bolt wouldn't even... It would fire the shell, but it would not cycle.
Yeah, and we've had them jam with low brass before.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they don't like low brass shells.
Yeah, they don't like super light loads. And so, but once we took it apart and cleaned it good, it cycles just like it did day one.
Speaking of 1187, I had a buddy that had one, and I believe they had a recall on it for a while about the gun going off when you slam the bolt without pulling the trigger. And a friend of mine had one, and he swears he did not touch the trigger, and the gun went off on Toho one day.
Wow.
Well, my dad's gun's like 30 years old. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, probably exempt from
it. It was like, it's like a 1988 model 1187.
Yeah, your dad's gun is from before they dipped them in.
Yo, yeah. This one's
Cerakote
like
Cerakote, and
it's blued and got the metal receiver, and
but it's killed a lot of birds.
A lot of birds.
Round three, Hunter, you're up.
Okay, you gave me a little bit of time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sticking with Benelli. I'm going the Benelli M2, which I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it's their entry level semi-automatic. You know, because it's going to run you about 1,000, but they're extremely versatile. You talked about the 870 and all that stuff. The M2. For a semi-automatic, you can get it in barrel lengths, turkey shotgun, pistol grip. That's just the route I'm going to go.
It's like the SBE's little brother.
Yeah,
it is.
You seem to be pretty heavy on the Benelli.
Another thing too is they make a lefty, and I shoot left-handed. So
okay, that is a big deal.
That draws to me. Yeah,
that is a big deal. What about you, Nate?
I'm going to go a little old school with this pick. I'm going to go Ithaca 37.
Oh my goodness, Ithaca.
Big time.
That's a big...
Is that what your dad used to shoot?
He used to have it. He used to have
weigh 20 or 25 pounds?
his gun weighed like 6.5 pounds. It was light.
It was light.
Really
and
light.
We called it the Ithaca because we did not know if
off.
It was going to go
yeah.
off
yeah.
or not.
Yeah.
And it had a polychoke, right?
It did have a polychoke on it.
It only gets better with a polychoke.
Which, for those... So...
What's a polychoke?
Yeah, for our listeners that don't know.
Don't ever shoot one.
Okay.
A choke tube goes inside the barrel and constricts it to some degree.
Right.
A full choke is the most constricted, and it goes out from there. A polychoke is fixed on the end of a barrel, and you twist it, and it changes the constriction of the barrel. And it was a disastrous idea.
Yeah, they still make them.
They do.
You can buy them for your gun today.
So it's adjustable?
It's an adjustable choke.
Yeah. Yep.
Like the top of a sriracha bottle?
Yes.
Like,
basically.
Like, exactly what
exactly
it's like.
Exactly like that.
How does it stay on when like
it doesn't.
Bullets fly in there?
Yeah, some of them don't.
It will also tend to spin. So you may start off with a super wide pattern, and as your day goes on, it gets narrower
or
vice versa.
It's almost like you need to put removable Loctite on your choke.
Yeah, oh set it gosh. And be done with it.
You know, I've always wondered about those poly chokes is, you know, like a full choke or an extra full. A lot of them don't, they say not to shoot steel because steel doesn't constrict like lead does. Mm-hmm. Somebody could probably make the mistake of tightening that thing too much, running a steel load through it and blowing a choke out.
Blow it out, yeah. But anyway, back to the Ithaca 37.
Yeah, tell us about your 37. Sorry.
So it's just a classic gun, classic pump gun, bottom eject. My dad had one back in the day. I shot it. Like when I first started shooting a 12 gauge, that's the gun I shot. And it was kind of like, is it going to pump this shell out? Or am I, is it not? I mean, it turned into a single shot for a while because it wouldn't eject the shell.
He just used that for his reason on why he missed because he couldn't shoot again.
Yeah, yeah. So,
which was fair.
Yeah. But anyway, I think this is more of a nostalgia pick for me because, you know, my dad had one and it was one of the first 12 gauges I ever shot. So,
see, I think that's a good strategy on these drafts. Like, if you go with nostalgia picks, they're harder to get beat up on.
Right.
It's like hard for me to pick on that because it was your dad's gun and stuff.
Y'all rode the polychoke pretty hard though.
The bottom eject thing is kind of neat. It's just something different.
Yeah,
it is neat. Ithaca actually made, and I can't remember what it was, the SP10. They made like one of the last 10 gauge production models that was like a big deal. And I think Remington bought it from them.
Remington, yeah. It's a Remington model now.
All right, so I'm up. I'm going. So I've gone semi-auto twice. So I need a pump.
You need a pump.
I'm going throw shade at this, if you will. The Winchester Model 12.
I had that one on my list. That's a great pick.
That is a very hard gun to throw shade at.
That's a great pick.
So let me give you some numbers on this gun.
Okay.
All right. When it was designed, Babe Ruth hadn't made the big leagues. When this gun was designed, there hadn't been a World War yet. No World War I, no World War II, nothing.
That's crazy.
There were 46 states when this gun came out.
Shut up.
I believe that's the gun they made the trench gun out of, too, is it not?
The Model 97 is the one they made the trench
hammer
gun.
It had a hammer.
It had a hammer.
This was like the first hammerless pump gun, wasn't it?
Yes. Classic. My grandfather shot a Model 12.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, so in the 80s, I remember seeing a Model 12 being shot that was designed in 1912. That should just show you how timeless that gun was.
This goes back to those gray-haired guys. You know, the guys were shooting them from a long time ago. They usually were on the right track.
When they started shooting this gun, they didn't know what a choke was.
No, everything was full choke.
It was called open bore. Yeah,
open bore or full choke or 32-inch barrel.
Heavy as all get out.
Yeah, they weigh like 9.5 pounds.
Around those pump gun days where they're killing geese at like 150 feet.
That's it.
Yes, that's exactly right. There was no such thing as a bad shot, and there was no such thing as a bag limit.
Right. Right.
So anyway, I just think that... I don't have one. I don't know what happened to my grandfather's. I'd love to. I got a lot of cousins and stuff. I'm sure one of them got it, but that's a gun that I need in my collection at some point.
Oh,
Model 12.
For sure.
That'd be a big time gun to have. And I've got the, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's the Ranger or something. There was a model that was derived off the Model 12, and that's what Emily actually shoots a lot. It's a Winchester pump, but it's not the same gun.
No, of course not.
Yeah. What's the price point on those?
You'd have to buy it from a collector. And I mean, you could probably get a rough one for $300 or $400.
Yeah, if you get one in good shape, you'd probably pay some money for
$1,500.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, last round.
Last round.
This is important. Don't blow it, Hunter.
Okay, so everybody has their sentimental pick. I think that's the direction I'm going to go. I started duck hunting. Well, my dad, he got me into it when I was probably 7, 8. He let me water swat ducks, and that's how I got started. But I started off with a New England Arm single shot, and that's what you're going to throw shade at it, and I don't blame you, but that's my sentimental pick.
No, I've got no shade over here, and the reason is my dad, when he was like 13 years old, the first shotgun he ever got was a 20-gauge New England model, and we have since collected every gauge they made it in. So we've got the 20, the 16, and the 12. And
haven't found
also,
a 410 yet.
You can buy them. They're just more expensive. And by more expensive, I mean they're $150 instead of like $75. But we want to have one of every model.
But you're talking about kicking you like a mule.
Oh, yeah, those suckers.
That thing was not fun to shoot.
Oh, yeah.
But I started out duck hunting with my dad. He didn't really know. This is back, he just kind of shot wood ducks because that was what was flying around. Well, before I even knew what it was, and I've only killed 3 of them my whole life, with that shotgun, I killed a Drake Widgeon, and I did not know what it was. I was with a buddy of mine whose dad was a big-time duck hunter, And I, the first question I asked, he said, "Oh my goodness, that's a widgeon." I said, "Does it eat good?" I mean, it's a stud. I mean, I got it mounted. It's still in my house, but that's all I've, I was just worried about eating it. He goes, "Man, you do not want to eat this duck." And now, now knowing I know what I know now, I'm so glad I didn't eat it, because I mean, that's obviously,
it's a super cool duck for first duck. And
yeah, well, that's, I don't believe, did I say it was my first duck?
I don't know. It was on your first hunt or so.
It
right?
was. It was one of my first. It was so early that I had no idea. I just shot it. It was actually flying. My dad swears it was flying. I was too young to remember. And he swears I shot it, so I got it mounted.
There that's you go. Cool. That's
very
awesome.
Very cool. No, I can't throw shade at that. And see, I'd the sentimental stuff, you can't get on it.
I'd most love to find one again.
Yeah, a lot of people's first guns are the New England Super single shot 20 gauge or 410.
The first dove I shot was with your dad's.
That 20 gauge, yeah.
Yep, that 20 gauge single shot.
I'm going to go over under for my last pick.
Really? I'm surprised at the over unders here. Hey.
It's such a conversation guy.
You've got to have him on the list, man. You got to have him on the list. I'm going to go Brownie Satori, and I know Hunter hates Brownings.
I've been waiting for someone to bring up Browning again, because I think they sell so well only because that symbol is such an awesome symbol. People just buy
the deer head symbol.
The deer head symbol, yeah. And I'm not big on Japanese guns. I think they're making the Satoris now in Japan.
They might be.
That rubs me the wrong way. So I'm Team USA.
I shoot a Browning daily.
Well, you shoot a gun that was made in Italy.
Italy, Japan, I'm going Italy.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. But I think the Satori's a classic over under. It's been made for like 40 years or something like that.
It's right there with the Beretta, too.
Yeah, and when you look back, like as a kid, looking through a magazine or whatever, that was the gun.
I mean,
it was a Ruger Red Label, a Browning Satori, or a Beretta.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those guns. It's not as expensive as some of the over unders, so it's kind of more affordable that most people can afford. And it's one of the workhorse over-unders. That's what I'm going for my last pick.
You know, an honorable mention should be that Ruger Red Label, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a great over and under. They've brought it into production, taken it out, brought it into production, taken it out. And that's an awesome shooting gun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful gun.
Yeah, very pretty. Yep.
Beautiful gun.
And kind of like you said with those Satoris, you can have a really nice one. It's be a well-made gun without feeling like you have to spend $2,000 on a shotgun.
Right.
Last pick of the last
My last pick, I'm going Model 97.
The Winchester Model 97. All right.
That's solid.
And the reason is I don't like any of the other guns I got on my list.
Let me see the list.
What else you got?
Oh, we'll talk about them in a second, but... Because we'll do unrestricted free agents after the draft. The Model 97 is the one you mentioned was a trench gun.
Trench gun, yeah.
John Browning designed it, but it was a Winchester gun.
Everything he put his hand on is like gold.
Oh, yeah.
But this is why I wanted to pick this gun, just because I wanted to talk about this. This is the gun that kind of inspired the Model 12 in 1912, but this gun was made in 1897.
Right.
So they made one in 1893, but this was really the first production pump gun, and it had a hammer on it. Germany actually submitted a request to the United States.
Oh, I've read this.
To stop production of this gun because it was unfair for us to have it and it caused too much carnage.
It's called winning.
Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
So I feel like that's the sound of freedom when you're shooting a Model 97. Like, that's big time,
that's
right?
That's awesome.
Like, they protested the war
because
over this gun.
We had a better gun than
that. Like, how do you not draft that?
That's
awesome draft pick there.
That's you have to.
If it causes Germany to cry.
The Nazis protested that it wasn't fair.
I mean.
I don't have anything else to add to that.
Nope,
I mean,
you just like, leave it right there.
You leave that.
It's the trench gun.
So did you have anything on your list that didn't get picked? Did you have anything in mind that you wanted to talk about? Or I'm surprised none of the new Winchester stuff got mentioned. Do you have any thoughts on the new Winchester stuff?
I haven't got a chance to really handle
it. I haven't either. I've heard good things about the SX3. I just think, you know, Winchester's kind of just getting passed by Remington and others.
No, when you talk about like the 97 and stuff, that's different. But when I think Winchester, I kind of think Shakespeare for fishing. They've been around a long, long time. But I feel like Nate was saying, companies are starting to leave them behind.
They're resting on what they... Yeah. I've shot the SX3. My buddy David, who's a good listener of the show, one of my best friends in the world, he shoots an SX3. He switched from 1187, and almost every hunt for a year, he threatened to throw the SX3 in the drink and shoot the 1187 again.
Yeah.
But it is a nice gun. Don't get me wrong. It's a nice gun. Yeah. It's mechanically sound. And then his son, Colby, who we talked about on last week's episode, shoots an SXP. Now, that's a very nice pump shotgun, But they got recalled for something similar to what you were talking about earlier.
97.
Yeah, you could actually just pump and it would fire. You didn't have to pull the trigger. So it was that's
kind of a hairy situation.
Yeah, it's something you don't want necessarily in the blind at 5:30 in the morning before shoot time.
That's why we have rule number one of gun safety.
Yeah.
Always keep your muzzle pointed in a safe direction.
Always keep your muzzle
always
pointed. Always. I shoot a Maxis. We didn't pick the Maxis. You have any shade you want to throw at the Maxis?
Oh yeah, yeah. Just that, you know, you're talking about it not. You didn't get to shoot a whole lot this year, or haven't been shooting a whole lot this year, because you like to use the excuse that you're guiding and stuff like that, and you let your client shoot. But I think it just, you have such a hard time getting the gun to operate that it you have a hard time.
I have cussed that gun on more than one occasion. I do like it, and I like the way it shoots. I like the way it points more than anything. It's more of a lot of your waterfowl guns are heavier in the front, so they swing better. And the Maxis is more of a point and shoot gun, and I shoot that better, which is why I bought it. When I went and shopped, like I looked at the Benellis, I looked at the Berettas, I could buy pretty much any gun I wanted at, you know, a consumer shop.
You're in the same ballpark as the other ones. At that point, it was just finding the gun.
It was finding the gun that fit me, and that one fit me. The other thing that's kind of stupid about that gun, though, is the way the magazine, you can't put a magazine extension on it. So because of the stock, it like locks in. It doesn't screw on.
Right.
So if you ever want to go on a goose hunt out west or something.
A snow goose hunt.
Conservation hunt where you don't have a plug. You're limited to three, actually.
Three.
You're limited to three shells.
Three?
So, yeah.
It doesn't have the.
Nope.
It doesn't even have a plug in it?
Nope.
No plug.
Three shots. So, super lousy.
Will it let you fit more 2 3/4 in?
Probably. I bet you could get five or something like that. 4 or 5. Anyway, it's. I like the gun. It's a good shooting gun. It does not like dirty shells.
No, is there a brand it works better with than others, or just when you say dirty, like
yeah,
older
I actually
shot
think it shoots Kents better, and I don't really like Kents.
Man, I love Kents.
I'm a heavy shot guy, but I think it shoots the Kents better. But if it gets any kind of dirt on that shell, like you might as well just pitch it.
Do you shoot heavy shot throughout the year?
Usually, yeah. Usually I shoot heavy shot.
That's big money shotgun shells there.
Yeah, well, used to I could buy it at a substantial.
Oh, yeah.
I'd buy it through rebates and all that stuff.
I remember you talking to me about that. Yeah.
The other gun I'm surprised no one mentioned was the Versamax. Your brother shoots a Versamax.
Yeah, I thought about that one. I kind of wanted to stay with more of the classic guns, I think. Just the long-running type of guns that have stood the test of time.
That Versamax is like someone giving you a warm hug, though.
But, oh, it's beautiful.
It shoots well.
It's like shooting a Cadillac, man.
It's on the heavy side.
Yeah. It is on the heavy side.
Because it has no felt recoil.
No recoil. Zero. Because the butt pad they put on it is like super soft, and it's almost like
they put a pillow.
It's like a gel material.
It's like a sleep number bed on that.
Yeah. The comb is gel as well, so your face is cushioned.
I didn't know that.
It's a super nice shooting gun. It'll shoot anything. You'll shoot literally any load you put in.
Yeah, I remember
it.
When they came out with them, they were bragging about how you could just shoot whatever you want.
Yeah, we'll go shoot clays, and he'll cycle everything. Then he can throw the 3-inch Magnum duck load in there and cycle every one of those.
That's a lot
too to
be said for a semi-automatic, that it'll out of the box shoot any shell you
any
put
shell.
Through. Because a lot of even the nicer, more expensive semi-autos, they have a break-in period where you have to shoot high brass
right.
on them of some kind.
Right. The other ones we didn't discuss were the Stoger. Did you have anything about the Stoger?
Yeah, I mean, I like my gun a lot.
It's
a 2000.
Me, right? You didn't want to draft it in a draft.
Yeah, but. I mean, it's a great gun. It's not a real expensive gun. Mine's a little older, but it'll cycle everything as long as you keep it clean.
Yeah.
If it gets dirty, it will not cycle. So I clean it a few times a year just to kind of make sure I don't have any problems in the field. And the other thing is it's light and it kicks hard. So what I did is I put a roll of nickels in the stock because the stock's hollow. Put a roll of nickels and stuffed it full of, you know, like stuff to keep that nickels from flying everywhere. And then I bought a Limb Saver recoil pad to put on it. And it has definitely significantly reduced the recoil. I can still tell the difference.
Plus,
like
you got $2 anytime you need it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And just that little
kid
from Better Off Dead
exactly
tracks
right.
you down. You get $2.
You get to the ramp and you need $5 to pay to park.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
You can take the buttstock off
your
gun.
So, but no, it's definitely reduced the recoil some, but still not as good as like a Versamax or something like that.
To me, when we were talking football style draft, that's like a picking a right tackle. Right. Like, it's solid. It's not spectacular.
Right.
It's a safe bet.
The other gun I'm surprised no one mentioned, this is the only other one I have on my list that no one mentioned, was the Beretta A400. You see a lot of love for that in the duck hunting community.
You do. Yeah, you do.
It's a good price point. Beretta's a good name. I've shot them. I'm not crazy about it.
I'm not crazy about them either.
Well, the other ones you see a lot is the Optimus. I guess it's kind of the newer model of the A400.
To me, the Berettas are probably responsible for more missed ducks than any other gun on the market.
The thing I don't like about the Berettas is the safety's in front of the trigger. I can't stand a safety in front of the trigger.
And if you look at
a lot of the Winchesters are that way too, the older ones.
Because I'm so used to having one, because I've shot Remingtons and
at the back.
I've shot those my entire shooting career. And so if you put one in the front, I'm not going to hit that. I'm going to hit the back of the trigger guard every time first and then be like, oh, man, and then hit the safety up front.
That's one of the differences between the Vinci and the Super Black Eagle, too, as well, is the location of the safety.
I did feel like that A400 had one of the softest recoils.
When I shot it, it was a 2 3/4, like a dove load.
So it didn't have a recoil.
It was hard to get a real good feel for it.
If that's your biggest fear, I've got a couple of steps. Grow up. Like, get over it. You're shooting a gun. Like, you don't need to buy something that's, like, just super soft.
I just didn't like going to shoot.
This is a sport of men, right?
I didn't like going to shoot and leaving with a headache every time I shot.
But, too, because that was my gun. If you duck hunt the right way, you don't necessarily need to shoot a box of shells every time you go out.
Oh, exactly.
Not even close.
No, yeah.
I think we talked about this. I usually carry, the other day, I didn't have enough shells on me.
Yeah, I think you had like three.
I had three and I ran out because I kept shooting snipe.
You winged a bird because you're shooting your Browning and you didn't have a shell to finish it with.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's all I got, guys. If y'all don't have anything else,
I'm good.
Do we have a winner of the draft?
I won, clearly.
I don't know. We don't have an unbiased opinion.
We have a
here.
Freaking expert, two experts in the industry at our table.
But I'm pretty sure I won.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No matter what Travis does, it could be the worst draft he's ever done in his life, and he would say he won.
Absolutely.
Literally every time. Absolutely.
It's called confidence.
Yeah.
He could pick four Heritage or Pardoner shotguns, and he'd think he won.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The Rossi 410.
Rossi.
Yeah.
It's time for keep and release. All right, Nate. What's your release item?
My release item this week is LaCroix soda.
Outstanding. Let's end the show right there. Best day ever.
I've had it. I've tried it a few times. Not a fan. Did not like it.
Soda out of water.
Okay. I'll probably like that.
Try it.
I'll probably like this one.
Put it in your mouth.
Here we go. Here's the verdict.
See, it's just bland to me.
This is what he's tasting, everyone, is coconut LaCroix with lime juice.
It just...
And Tito's.
No.
No, it's just kind of bland to me. It tastes like carbonated water. There's not a ton of flavor. More flavor.
It's bad.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan.
Thank you, Nate, for being a voice of reason in the darkness at my house. Know,
I feel victim. I feel victimized. I feel victimized.
This is not about you. This is about LaCroix soda.
Well, I feel victimized.
I feel like it was a personal attack.
It's like a LaCroix. It's like sweeping the world.
Yeah. And
like,
it's stupid.
It's like the coolest thing that anybody could ever drink in their lives.
Also, you can't say, would you like some kind of a water? No, you say, oh, would you get me a LaCroix?
Yeah, get in your
mind. Would you have me a LaCroix? You have to call it by name.
Yeah. No, you can't just say, can I get some sparkling water, please?
No, I need a LaCroix.
Anything
I don't subscribe
else is not
to this what you're saying right here at all. First of all, it's the only thing I can have right now on this stupid 80-day obsession thing.
The stupid 80-day obsession thing that you loved at the beginning of the episode?
I do love it, but it's hard. So, water and LaCroix, that's it. And I just, sometimes you need a different taste in your mouth.
What's your release, Em?
My release is duck season. I am so over duck season. And I have been patient, and I've been long-suffering, and I haven't slept in months. All my money's gone. My yard is full of garbage and decoys and boats and people constantly. And I'm so over duck season. I'm ready. And I know everyone's going to cry when it's over, but it's time. It's time to let it go.
It's almost over.
I'm holding on by a thread to my sanity.
Baby, do you want to go duck hunting tomorrow?
What time?
See, she's right on the edge. She's right on the edge. I could bring her back.
What's your release, Travis?
My release is on the Facebook group. I like to go to the Facebook group for my releases.
There's a lot of material there.
Yes, there is.
There's this fiasco around Lake Conway in Orlando.
I've seen something about that.
There's some duck hunters hunting on it. the homeowners around it don't like them hunting on it. There's only one little spot they can hunt. It's like an island out in the middle. It's a public lake. And so the homeowners have started putting duck food out there to attract ducks, and then it's going to make it illegal for the hunters because they're baiting and this, that, and the other. And this is not really about all of that, so much so as it is about the duck hunters just kind of being jerks about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I feel like if we're going to win fights like this, like, we've got to go about it in the right way. And you can't just say, oh, I'm going to set up in their backyard and shoot ducks.
No, I totally agree. I was thinking about this earlier, and I totally agree with you. Just because it's legal doesn't make it right.
Correct.
You know, there's some ethics involved.
And I'm not saying you should not be allowed to hunt on the lake.
Absolutely not.
I'm just saying there's a correct way to do it.
Correct way to go about it. I don't like to set up to where my pellets can rain down on somebody's house.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the issue here. I just think the issue here is some guys are pissed off that some people want to take away hunting privileges, and I am too. Like, I don't like that.
Right.
I think the issue is they want to go all everybody out there and just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot.
Yeah,
and shoot,
see, that's not the answer.
To kind of be jerks about it.
Nope.
And I think there's a better way to go about it. I think you could have some productive conversations.
Sure.
So they may not win, but that's step one.
Right.
So keep items.
All right, so my keep item this week are some Bluetooth headphones I got for Christmas. They're called the MPOW, I think it's called MPOW, MPOW-059 over-ear Bluetooth headphones.
They're from Amazon?
They're from Amazon.
I have the same ones.
Do you? No wonder we're friends. Anyway, so these headphones are completely wireless. They do come with a wire, so if you...
You can plug them in,
which is nice. But they connect to your phone, iPad, computer, if you have Bluetooth on your computer. And the sound quality, I was a little leery about the sound quality because I've read some reviews about different Bluetooth headphones being not so great. These have great sound quality, and I use them all the time.
They're way more comfortable than in-ears.
Oh, they're so comfortable. And they're over the ear, so they cancel out a lot of the noise. They're not like noise canceling, but... I actually wear those when I mow the yard. Yeah, they really do cut out a lot of the outside noise, and the sound quality is excellent. I mean, they are super, super, they sound so good.
Mm-hmm. I love them.
And they were like, I think $40
or something. Yeah, $35,
like $40. Like, you know, you spend $100 on a pair of headphones to get sound quality the same.
Yep, that's exactly right. What about you, Sunshine?
My keep this week is a controversial keep in our house, but it is the pop socket, which sticks on the back of the case. And I really... had it for fun and like because the kids like to make fun of me having it, but now that I have the iPhone X, which we talked about on last week on episode 19, it's become a lifesaver because I'm terrified of dropping this phone. It's all glass, and I use the pop socket literally 100% of the time when I'm carrying it, just for the extra grip.
Pause, because Hunter's here.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate has come over to the dark side. Nate now has a pop socket.
I do have one.
Hunter,
Hunter, how do you feel about this?
I had one for probably 2 weeks. And I like to put my phone in my back pocket. And the pop socket was hanging it up. And I got frustrated and just ripped it off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My wife has one. Loves it.
Right?
To me, I mean, it might make more sense for women because their hands are smaller. You know, that's a big phone. And, you know, if you can't really, this is just a 7 here, but if you can't grip your phone, it makes a little more sense. But I don't have a hard time holding my phone. So.
What is your excuse, Nate?
See, when I got one, I didn't like my, I have the 7 Plus, which is a bigger phone. And I do have fairly big hands. And
they're lotiony soft and he can't grip his phone.
Yeah. And at first, I didn't really like it. When I first got it and put it on there, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to keep it. I wasn't sure, but kind of once you get used to it, it's really nice.
Nice to have.
I mean, they do make holding your phone easier, and you're not afraid of dropping it so much, and you can use it as a stand if you're watching Netflix or something like that.
I wish you guys could see me shaking my head right now.
I mean, I'm kind of in on them, and they're fun to kind of play with, fidget with. I'm a fidgety person anyway.
Yes.
Get him a fidget spinner.
We've tried.
Yeah,
We're hoping they'll sponsor us.
So, anyway, I like it. I'm not like 100% sold on it. Like, I'm not like a fanboy of these things, but I do enjoy mine.
You can see the utility.
They're super utilitarian. Yeah,
mine's not even cute. It's just black, but it just works and I like it. So that's my keep.
All right. Here's a real keep item. and I've been meaning to do this. We didn't do keep and release back around Christmas and stuff. So I'm remiss in this, but I found a guy on Facebook named Monty Clark. And he owns a company called Wicked Vanguard Motors. And he's located in Sebring, Florida. And Emily will attest, Monty got me up and running. My motor on my duck boat was having some issues after phase one. You know, as a guide, I got to be able to be on the water day in, day out. And Monty got me up in, what, 12 hours then?
Yeah, and it was what I really liked about him, and I think what you liked about him, is he worked all night on your motor, and then he sent videos, which I like people who embrace technology in that way. And so Travis was like hearing the motor, seeing it run. And
he took pictures of the cylinders, and he took pictures of the heads, and he took pictures of everything.
See, that's big time. That's what you like to see out of your mechanic, because you leave your car or boat with a guy for a few days. Most guys are pretty trustworthy, but you just never know what's going on. And so for him to keep you updated like that with pictures and videos.
I think it speaks to how confident he is in his abilities and his job. And he's not threatened by giving away
by showing information.
Right. He's just like, whatever, I know what I'm doing and I'm going to get
you
back.
And he knows those motors inside and out. So we're coming up on the end of duck season. A lot of you guys are going to be done with your boats. You're going to want to tune up or whatever. Hit me up on Facebook or whatever. Find Monty. We get you in touch with him because the dude is my motor's running better than it has ever run since I've owned it. And I mean, it you don't choke it anymore. You just crank it at the ramp and it runs. I mean, it is purrs like a kitten.
And he was super fair on his prices.
Super fair on his price. He's got another job. He even brought it north the next day, so I didn't have to go as far to get it. Just a nice, nice guy. So like to see him stay in business and get him some more business. So I know a lot of you guys are listening have mud motors and they're all built on the same motor just about. So anyway, Monty Clark, Wicked Vanguard Motors, we'll have a link to him in the show notes.
You're listening to the Cast and Blast Florida Podcast. The podcast is the brainchild of Travis Thompson and Nathan Henderson. All production and editing is done by Emily Thompson. Make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, leave us a review on iTunes, and follow us on social media @CastAndBlastFL.